Hello again. This is Mike DeRosa, and this is New Focus. Today on New Focus, we welcome back environmentalist and human rights activist Scott Deshefi. Scott will give us the inconvenient facts about U.S. healthcare that are given short shrift by the government and the corporate mass media. Scott will tell us why the healthcare debate is really a double-bind communication in which we are presented with the message of healthcare reform, but the political body language of healthcare deform. The U.S. political inner party encourages us to respond like little victims and accept the status quo of rationing of healthcare based on economic class or the acceptance of a program that will dump people into a third-class healthcare system that will benefit the insurance, pharmaceutical, hospital, industrial care complex. Today, a new focus, we reject this double-bind healthcare communication and the double-bind outcomes it creates by uttering the unspeakable phrase, single-payer healthcare for all. We'll tell you about the inconvenient facts about H.R. 676, a single-payer bill that sits in exile in a congressional committee, and will even tell you about a real healthcare debate that is coming soon to a city or town near you. So stay tuned for Toward a New Healthcare Language Game that respects your rights as a healthcare client and serves your unique and preferred healthcare outcomes.
But there's a prescription to make it all better, laid out in this letter from my HMO. Dear number 103692405-3887, have you considered suicide? It's a healthcare plan you probably haven't tried. Enclosed, please find a tab of cyanide for your perusal. You're getting to an age where your potential need for medical attention, even intervention, isn't hypothetical. So do it quick and solve this nation's healthcare crisis by not getting sick.
Scott Deshefi, welcome back to our show.
Nice to be back, Mike. Thank you.
Scott, you've done a lot of research on healthcare reform. What's your take on the Obama administration and the Congress's proposals for healthcare reform?
Well, at least it's a step, but I'm not sure that it's not a case of one step forward and two steps backwards. We know that when things have been done in small increments and Band-Aid approaches, that things have actually gotten worse back in the Clinton administration. I guess around 94, there was an attempt to increase health care and kind of a half-hearted step towards universal health care. And the result was that more people became uninsured. So I'm concerned that the public option that has been thrown out there, and it is a moral dilemma to me that we don't have single-payer universal health care. And to me, it's not a case of economics. It's a case of morality that we are not pushing for single-payer universal health care. The two major parties are both responsible for that. And what they are doing is providing, potentially, instead of that, a public option. And that is going to be the tank where everybody gets thrown, ultimately, who is chronically ill and doesn't potentially have insurance right now, and who's going to be dropped or potentially dropped by the insurance companies because their whole objective is the profit line and their stockholders and shareholders. And that is why, as long as they are gatekeepers in any way, shape, or fashion, we're going to have continuous problems. It's going to cost, I believe, $1 trillion, whereas if we went for a nationalized plan with everybody contributing towards it and everybody in the pool, in essence, as they say, would save us nationally. It's been estimated $300 to $350 billion because of reduced administrative costs. If you look at something like Medicare, which is a national program, national health care program for the elderly, they have 3% administrative costs. The Veterans Administration, again, is a limited universal health care for a small subset of the country, our veterans. They have about a 3% administrative cost. And if you look at the private sector, the insurance sector, their administrative costs are somewhere between 20 and 25%. So it's inefficient. We're paying twice what other industrialized nations are paying per capita, per person in this country for our health care. And despite that, we are very low on the list in terms of infant mortality and longevity of men and women both. I think we're 22nd life expectancy for males, 23rd life expectancy for females, and we're 27th in terms of infant mortality. In Japan, Luxembourg, Sweden, less than 2 out of every 1,000 babies who are born die. In the United States, we're over 7 out of every 1,000.
And we have one of the largest obesity crises in the world at this point. 50-60% of our population is overweight, and we don't address this on a low-tech way. We address it with high-tech solutions, including surgery and whatever. So, Scott, the bottom line is we're talking here really about quality, quantity, the universality of a system, how much it's actually going to cost people of moderate means. And we should really be having a debate about these kinds of issues. And maybe you could talk about the debate going on, for example, on Fox News.
Well, I don't watch Fox News that much, but I know what they're saying, and I watch it enough to have some idea of what they're saying. I just want to go back for a moment to a very important point that you made with respect to obesity, the high rise in diabetes, which is really an epidemic proportions, particularly among our young people in this country. Preventive medicine is so important. And there again, a single-payer universal health care will enable us to have a database, number one. We don't have any database in this country. To say that we have a health care system is wrong. We've never designed one based on preventive care.
It's a patchwork.
It's a patchwork system. That's right. If you were to set it up as an equation with the numerator and denominator, the numerator being value, accessibility, and affordability, and the denominator being cost, we're very, very inefficient, and we just aren't helping people out in this country. And we know that we have 47 million people who don't have insurance at all. We've got, what's the figure now, maybe 70 million people who are underinsured. I briefly had lunch with some seniors today in Lebanon, Connecticut at the senior center, and I was talking with a woman. A friend of hers had a stroke, and she's recuperating. And to undergo the recuperative process, she may be paying out of pocket somewhere around $6,500, right? So that's the other issue. But the debate, Fox is saying that it's unaffordable. Well, we know that's a myth, that it'll actually save us money in terms of reducing administrative costs. There won't be any advertising involved, everything else. Also, we will have a unified single database instead of 1,100, 1,200 databases, none of which can really exchange information. We don't have any medical information with which to make progress other than through Medicare and the Veterans Administration. All the insurance companies just maintain records as to what the cost factors are and whether they're making a profit or they're losing money on you, in which case they potentially will drop you from the insurance. So decades have been lost in terms of retaining information about what type of medical practices work best, what types of physicians and hospitals are most efficient in terms of patient care and that type of thing.
But in terms of the debate itself, Scott, I think what we're having presented to us is a double bind communication system. On the one hand, we get no insurance is good for you. Take care of yourself, get your own private policy. On the other hand, we have the other double bind communication, which is, okay, we're going to establish a system which is a series of band-aids. It might be a program that includes competition via the government. It might not be. That's being decided by 6 or 7 senators who sit around eating unhealthy food up at the cafeteria at the Congress, who come from very small states. So the real issue is this really a debate? Is this really a choice? And what is the real alternative to this double bind communication, this double bind solution, which is really the same solution?
Yeah, well, somebody, and I forget who it was, Mike, said that the definition of alternatives is the supreme instrument of power. And we don't really have any alternatives with the insurance companies. Anybody who has an insurance company right now for their medical care, try to get a dentist to do a tooth extraction and see what choice you have. I've often said that Doc Holliday did more diverse dentistry than our dentists do now in between gunning people down at the OK Corral. Or Blackbeard's crew had better medical care. If they lost an arm or a leg in a fight on the, I think his ship was Queen Anne's Revenge, then they were compensated for it and they were treated for it by medical people on Blackbeard's crew.
Scott, let's take that example further. Yeah. I mean, it's well known in the dentistry field that implants work. They've been done for 30, 40 years now. When a person loses a tooth out of their mouth, if an implant isn't put in, the two teeth on either side cave in, etc. And yet, there are very few insurance companies that will pay anything toward a implant, let alone dentistry. I know of people who have dental coverage under major companies, and the implant will never be paid for. And so people have to spend $5,000-$6,000 to get a tooth implant. Now, let's talk about this in terms of the long term, because I think this is a good metaphor for what's going on. If people lose their teeth because they're not given proper care, or they're given devices that they have to stick in their mouth, which create all kinds of problems for them in terms of infection and what have you, in the long term, it's going to cost a lot more money to take care of this person because that procedure wasn't done properly. What's wrong with this picture?
What's wrong with the picture is that it's all based on profit, but it isn't even thought through in terms of long-term profit. That's how ridiculous it is. If we were living in Canada and we needed an implant, we would get it. You know, all this mythology about there being waiting lines and everything else, that's not the case, certainly not for anything that isn't elective surgery. If somebody wants to have a facelift, maybe they have to wait a while to get it. But if it's something that's critical to their health, there are no waiting lines in Canada or the UK or France. France has been touted as having the world's best medical insurance or medical program for its citizens. So all of that is mythology that's been brought forth, and that costs a lot of money. So what are we paying for in terms of our medical insurance? Cigna, I think, laid off 1,100 people very recently, and they made about $100 billion in profits. And the insurance companies together, not just Cigna, are spending about $1.5 million a day, Mike, and I know you know this, to stop universal health care in this country. Well, who's paying for that? Their shareholders? No. No, the people that have the coverages, that are paying the deductibles, that are paying the thousands of dollars for an implant rather than having the insurance pay for it, and who are paying the high premiums, which are increasing every year. We just had Blue Cross Blue Shield come to the state legislature and ask to increase their premiums.
Scott, are you familiar at all with what went on at the legislature in the last session in terms of the passage of that enabling legislation?
In terms of the Sustinet package and the override of the veto and so on, Dr. Peter De La Rosa, who's a New London Green, part of the Green chapter of the Green Party in New London, and I have been talking for about a week to develop a forum somewhere in southeastern Connecticut, and hopefully this will develop into other forums, rallies, that type of thing, in August during congressional recess to really kick the backsides of Democratic and Republican Congress people alike who have dropped the ball in terms of proper health care and certainly single-payer universal health care in this country, to get information to debunk the myths about single-payer universal health care.
So this debate and the passage of this bill, in the final analysis, the bottom line is that they're going to study the problem a little bit longer.
Until 2011.
Right. And essentially not one penicillin tablet has come out of this. And, of course, there was a vote in the legislature, and one Democrat from Waterbury voted not to override the governor's veto of a bill which would have allowed small business people to buy into the state system. But again, we have to address the issue of cost. And again, we're not getting a real debate in this country. We have the Fox Network telling us, no, we don't need any health care. We have then the various other media outlets saying, well,
but there's a prescription to make it all better, laid out in this letter from my HMO. Dear number 103692405 3887, Have you considered suicide? It's a healthcare plan you probably haven't tried. Enclosed, please find a tab of cyanide. For your perusal, you're getting to an age where your potential need for medical attention, even intervention, isn't hypothetical. So, do it quick and solve this nation's healthcare crisis by not getting sick.
Today on New Focus, we are interviewing ecologist and human rights advocate Scott Deshafy. You can reach Scott at 860-642-7066. That's 860-642-7066.
Bye-bye now, before you get one hemorrhoid older. So long, you're no longer a cost-effective policy holder. Won't you help us file your folder in the shredder by being just a little bit deader?
Now, also, I would like to address the political issue. We were told during the campaign, and we've been told for years now, that if the Democrats got 60 votes in the Senate, and if the Democrats got a majority in the Congress, and if they had the presidency, they would stand up to these forces, to these various interests, and we would have a true universal healthcare system that would look like single payer. It would be similar to single payer in that it would be universal and would allow every citizen in the United States to have healthcare. What happened?
Well, what happened is that they didn't live up to what they said, and nobody expected them to, because they're getting all kinds of campaign contributions. As you know, I ran for Congress in the 2nd Connecticut Congressional District, and my Democratic opponent got 79% of his campaign contributions from outside the district, according to a group called MapLight, a watchdog group. And that is not atypical. The people that are currently in Congress are there because they've gotten huge campaign contributions from the pharmaceutical companies and also from the medical corporations and insurance corporations. So it's no surprise. They're indentured to those corporate structures. Well, I'll give you an example. In our own state, CHIPS was touted as a great victory. Well, about half of the kids that were not covered, medical coverage, got it. But there are still 50% of those kids that weren't covered that are still not covered by CHIPS. And SustaNet is going to be the same type of thing. Everybody talking on, whether it's Fox or one of the other networks, are talking about, will Obama be able to declare victory, some type of Pyrrhic victory even, out of this? And that's all they're concerned about, is the politics and getting reelected. They're not concerned about the health care for Americans in this country. SustaNet, unless there's a mandatory contribution from everybody in the state, I think is going to fall on its face. Massachusetts has problems because not everybody is paying in. Not everybody is in the pool, once again. So it's similar to a public plan at the national level where the sick are going to be there, the chronically ill, the people that don't have much money to contribute to it in the first place, and the people that are going to be dropped there by the insurance companies so they can maximize their profits.
So what sense then is this a case of the solutions being the problem?
Very much so, and that's well put. We have to come to grips with the fact that the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies, the for-profit care, the corporate oligarchy that we have in this country, they are the problems. And until we come to grips with that, and gradually or quickly eliminate them from the equation so that they're insuring automobiles or insuring extraneous cares. If somebody wants to go to Switzerland to get treated there, then they cover that with their insurance or some type of other umbrella insurance or safety net insurance above and beyond what is needed for good care for everybody in this country, then we're not going to solve the problem. And these Band-Aid, small incremental approaches are going to make matters worse.
Let's talk about change and persistence, because there's a famous phrase that the French often use, which is the more things change, the more they remain the same. But let's talk beyond that statement and talk about the idea of change and persistence. And what would you want to happen to have real change take place?
Well, I think we need to have strong third parties. Very simply, if you look at Canada or other countries that have single-payer universal health care, they developed strong third parties. They got people elected from third parties into government, and they became the agents of change. Clearly, the Democratic and Republican parties are not going to be, ever, because they are indentured to the corporations, and they're just not going to break that stranglehold unless we get third-party people elected. So where third parties have been elected to Congress, as an example, or Parliament, what have you, depending on the country, then single-payer shortly follows. One thing that could be done is to take Medicare and say, okay, within 10 years, if we want to give the insurance companies time to get out of the picture, and I don't see any obligation to do that because, again, this is not an economic crisis. It's a moral crisis, and they are the moral problem as far as I'm concerned. But if we wanted to do that, we could say, okay, within 10 years, we're going to have single-payer, universal health care, essentially Medicare for everybody. Within the next 2 years, we're going to decrease from 65 years of age to 55 years in terms of the coverage. And then 2 years thereafter, we're going to decrease it to 45 years of coverage, and then 35 and so on. That is one type of approach. But even that, in my view, is unacceptable, because what about the people that are suffering, that are going to be dying? Because tens of thousands of people die every year due to lack of medical insurance in this country. And what about the people that are going to be dying during that 10-year period to phase all this in?
And this isn't a new idea. I mean, in the Congress right now, and there has been in the Congress for many years, H.R. 676, which has about 80 or 90 co-sponsors, and is a universal public option, single-payer, comprehensive proposal. So why is the Obama administration starting with an entire new program that they're fabricating in some back room when they have this bill, this potential law, sitting in a committee? All they have to do is activate it and compromise from there. Why are they taking the position that they have to reinvent the healthcare wheel?
They shouldn't be, because John Conyers and Dennis Kucinich and others have been backing H.R. 676 for several years now. And the wheel that they're trying to reinvent doesn't have enough spokes. So it's going to be a failure. And I think that it's not just going to be a failure in terms of medical coverage, but it's going to be an economic failure, because it's going to cost the country $1 trillion at a time when we can least afford that. So what has to be done is people have to have the courage to stand up to the insurance companies and say, I'm not concerned about being reelected. I'm concerned about doing what's right in this country and providing medical health insurance, same as in Canada, France, Germany. We were talking earlier about Otto Bismarck, the German program, which really is a multi-tiered type of program, and you have different types of insurances, actually, where you can choose an option. But that began back in the 19th century. Otto von Bismarck, a fellow we assume, a Prussian-type mentality. It is iron and blood which rules the world, not demonstrations and weeping in the streets. He was the one who felt that everybody in Germany should have some type of basic, affordable health care. And he was the one who started this.
Scott, let's talk about educating the public and having a real debate, because I think a lot of people who are listening to this show probably know that we have a bias, but that's okay. It's not a problem, because we're giving facts. For example, let me give a little factoid. 60% of the people who go into bankruptcy in this country do so because of health care costs that they have gotten because of a major health crisis. And 80% of them have some form of health insurance, obviously inadequate, but many of them, as I said, 80% have health insurance. So what is this going to do now that we're about to throw another 2 million people into the street because extended benefits of unemployment in the United States are not in the cards?
Well, for one thing, we're going to continue to have not only personal bankruptcies, but bankruptcies in the automobile industry, because if you look at GM, which is on the verge of extinction, about $1,700 to $2,000 of every automobile that they've been producing in the last couple of years, that cost increase has been due to payment of medical coverages for their employees. So single-payer universal health care is not only necessary for the individual, but also necessary for businesses, particularly small businesses in this country. You go to Canada and you buy a Toyota, as an example, it's going to cost you, on average, about $1,700, $2,000 less than if you bought it just across the border in the United States. Why? Because they have a single-payer, nationalized healthcare system that provides medical coverage for all the employees so that the businesses don't have to worry about it.
Scott, if someone in our listening audience wanted to contact you about these rallies or get in touch with you about this issue to really start a debate going, a real debate, how could they do that?
They can call me at 860-642-7066.
Want to repeat that number?
860-642-7066. And I'd be happy to provide information as these forums develop, and particularly the one in southeastern Connecticut. And we've got people such as Ledge Light that hopefully will be involved. We've been contacting Peter and I, Bacchus Hospital, Lawrence Memorial Hospital in our area, southeastern, eastern Connecticut in general. Also, some of the superintendents of schools and social services to try to get them on board. And I believe we're going to have a great opportunity to provide information to people and hopefully have hundreds of people gather in support of single-payer universal health care.
And in summary, what would you like to say?
Just that we have to keep up the fight. It is presumed that it's a done deal, that the Democrats and Republicans have sold health care out in this country to the benefit of the insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies so that they can continue to get their campaign donations from said donors. I think we need to fight. The congressional people are on recess right now. Let's bring the fight to their doorsteps and let them know that the people of this country want single-payer universal health care. And all surveys indicate that in the medical profession and among individuals who are knowledgeable in this matter, that 60 to 70% in both categories favor single-payer universal health care in this country.
Scott, it was a real pleasure having you back on the show, and I hope in the future you can come on back and give us an update.
My pleasure, Mike.
Today on New Focus, we have interviewed environmentalist and human rights activist Scott Deshefi. Any opinions or views expressed on New Focus are not necessarily those of the licensee, management, or staff of this station, and they are opinions protected by the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. If you like our show, why not drop a line to me, Mike DeRosa, and tune in every week to New Focus for the best in alternative news and views. You can contact us at New Focus Radio at WWUHFM, 200 Bloomfield Avenue, West Hartford, Connecticut, 06117. I want to remind our listeners that you can hear New Focus on WWUH 91.3 FM every Friday at 12 noon and every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. You can also hear our show on WHUS 91.7 FM every Friday at 5 p.m. and WESU 88.1 FM every Monday at 1:30 p.m. If you missed any part of today's show or you want to hear other New Focus programs, go to our recently updated website, www.newfocusradio.org. That's all one word, www.newfocusradio.org. Our website, www.newfocusradio.org, has pictures, articles, and other information not found anywhere else. This is Mike DeRosa, hoping you will tune in next week to New Focus.